Hi, everybody. My name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Trevor for inviting me down here. And Doug was brilliant. And I met my friend Diana. We had some good AA coffee and a chit chat. My heart is already full, you know, from the birth, the chit takers and the camaraderie and the feeling and the emotion. And we're all rooting for each other. And then Doug giving a great talk. I've already heard everything I need to know, so I'm out of here. Bye. Yeah. I want you to know I'm the worst drunk I've ever met. I can't believe I'm sober still. I can't believe I'm sober and I'm happy. Because those two things don't go together, right? That's why we don't want to get sober. I don't want to get sober because sobriety sucks. It does. Ask any newcomer. Sobriety sucks without a program. In fact, it's so bad, I get so uncomfortable, so restless, irritable, discontent, so angry, so full of self-pity, I drink again. And of course, that sounds normal for us, but if you've just come out of the lockdown psychiatric unit, one more time. The most insane thing you could do would be to pick up a drink. But there I am, all lit up again. Because I can't stay sober. Because my alcoholism needs treating. And I'm either going to treat it with the big book and the 12 steps, or I'm going to treat it with vodka. There's no in between. This was the last house on the block for me, and I think it works a little bit better when it's like that. I, like many of you, did not want to come to this AA bullshit. Have you seen it on the telly? Have you seen that shit? That's a TV for you guys. On the telly, it shows that it's depicted in the most despicable, depressing way possible. There's 14 bald, fat, ugly men in a circle in a smoky-filled, depressed room. And one of them might be sober a week, and they're all clapping and crying, like, holy shit, I never want to end up there. And then at the end of me drinking, that's the only place people are telling me to go. The doctors, the psychiatrists, family and friends, I'm like, no, you don't understand me, mate. I'm already suicidally depressed. Now you want to send me to AA? Plus, even though I was such a bad drunk and a bad, I didn't think I was an alcoholic because I don't look like an alcoholic. Most of us have a preconceived notion of what it looks like to be an alcoholic. And for me, it's the bum on the end of the off ramp, right? With a horrible big bushy beard, not a cool bushy beard like yours, an horrible dirty tan bushy beard, that loser figure that's begging for change. That's an alcoholic. Couldn't be anybody in here because you're either too young, you're too beautiful, you're too well put together, you're too businesslike. Well, some of you over there look like you've had a good drink. But, you know, for the most part, you don't look alcoholic, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic. So remember how it happened for me. I had met my match one at midnight one time in Santa Barbara. Living in my crappy room in a shitty house on the west side of town. My three other housemates were downtown partying, having excluded me, of course, as usual, which made for more self-pity. And quicksand stretched all around me. King alcohol had kicked my ass again. I'm suicidally depressed. I'm going to kill myself. I'd fantasized about that for the longest time. So I decided to make the call, finally. So I found the Yellow Pages. You youngins will have to Google that shit, won't you? I found the Yellow Pages and I couldn't find the name AA. That's how drunk I was. Darren, it's in the beginning of the book. I called the number and this lovely older lady answered the phone. She was so good at her job. I'll be forever grateful for her. I got straight down to business. Yes, I might drink too much, lady. But if what's happened to me, it happened to you, you'd be drinking like me too. And yeah, I'm gonna. And she just taught me off the ledge and said, "I'm gonna kill myself anyway." And she just threw in a little nugget. She was amazing. And then finally, she said, "Hey, Darren, I don't know if you know this or not, but tomorrow night, have you ever been to a meeting? There's a meeting down the street from you. Have you ever been to a meeting?" No. Well, there's this meeting at 8 o'clock. It's a men's meeting. She made it sound so special. I didn't know there were 200 fucking meetings a week in San Juan. So the next day I came to, and I can't say I didn't have a drink. I'm physically dependent on vodka at this stage of my drinking. You know, if I have to leave my bedroom, let alone my house, I have to have a cheeky drink, you know what I mean? Especially if I'm doing something really weird, like interacting with other humans. Yeah. So I had a little bit of a drinky poo, and I've got to go to this meeting. I showered for the first time in months, and I gelled my hair all sexy, like I used to be able to. And I went down to this meeting and had enough in me just so I could look in the eye. And I went down to this meeting, and it was like this. It wasn't like I'd seen on the telly. It was like this. There was a vibe about it. There was a vast amount of fun about it all. There were 80 men all stoked on seeing each other. Some of them were high-fiving each other because he'd gotten a promotion at work. Somebody else had gotten engaged. Now, I'm sat down. I'm not interacting, of course. I'm sat down like an observer. But you don't want to catch anything from these happy folks, you know what I mean? By this time, I hate people generally speaking, but I especially hate those happy people. You know what I mean? How annoying are they? And so then what happened next really caught my attention. Just underneath, the deadly earnestness kicked in. The secretary sat down and shuffled his paper. Everybody got the cue. Two huge circles of men. Everybody sat down. Everybody shut up. Got off their phones, if you can believe that. Respected the start of the meeting. Now, as the meeting started and they were doing some readings and things were going on, I thought, wow, this is crazy. And I thought, this is a good time to open my jacket pocket. I pull out a massive bottle of vodka and start drinking on the meeting. And the guy next to me is like, holy fuck. This guy's drinking vodka in the meeting. And I'm like, hey, wow, why is nobody else drinking? Isn't this Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you have a drinking problem? I have a really bad drinking problem. I stayed drunk in the ruins of Santa Barbara AA for a year. A year! I got quite a reputation back then, let me tell you. It took me 3 months to figure out what you cheeky monkeys were doing. You lot were putting your vodka into a water bottle and then bringing it to the meeting. You could have told me. No, it wasn't always like that. I loved drinking. I drank from 13 to 33, right? 20 years. Now, 13, I thought that's a young age. I thought I'm going to really impress people by that. I thought, 13, I thought Kelly's going to fall off his chair, eh? 13, that's outrageous. No, not, especially not in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? What I've realized is you can't outdo anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. So don't even try. Someone over here is already saying, I was drinking when I was 8. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. There's this one woman speaker, she actually gives a great talk, but her whole pitch surrounds the fact that she was drunk in her addicted mother's womb. In the womb! Okay, Teresa, you win. You win. I think she was born smoking a pack of Marlboro Reds. She blew a 0.25, you know. But I drank from 13 to 33. I had a good time for a lot of those years, a good time. Anyone else have a good time? Have any other party animals? Yeah, some people don't like the fact that you might have had a good time. It's all, well, don't worry, mate. I am going to ruin my life and then want to kill myself. We're going to get there. But alcoholism crept into my life. I was an entrepreneur in Manchester. And alcoholism is subtle and progressive. And it first turned up in the form of massive amounts of anxiety. Ooh, isn't that the worst? And then it comes in the form of massive amounts of depression. And it comes in the form of this spiritual illness that's eating me alive from the inside out. My soul's becoming ever blacker and soon to become ash. And I don't know what's going on. And by the way, somebody stole my happy gene. Right? I can't remember the last time I was happy. This is progressive and over time. Now, when I'm out drinking at night, this is during the day when alcoholism is really kicking my ass, sober. That's when it gets you the worst. When I'm drinking at night, I'm like Superman. you put enough alcohol in me, maybe a line or something, I'm going to have a good time. I'm like a mixture between James Bond, Dave Chappelle, and Harry fucking Potter. We're going to have fun. But it was really affecting my ability to do the work, and I was an entrepreneur, and the bankers watched with amused skepticism. I've whirled some fat checks in and out of his account. But I can't get out of my sports car to go to a high-powered business meeting that I'd set up the day before because I'm paralyzed with fear. Things got so bad, I got fired from a business that I created. Only another alcoholic can pull that off, right? There was four directors, me and my brother were the main guys there, and I got away with a lot of bullshit because I was one of the owners. But we always have somebody that's on to us. My brother was on to me all the time. It was annoying. And then it ended up, we had this boardroom meeting. I wasn't paying attention as usual until I heard him say, yes, sir, Darren, we had a meeting before this meeting and we've decided to let you go. And I woke up and said, wait, what? And he's a brilliant, smart man. And I knew he'd had it all sewn up. And so my fear turned quickly into anger. And so I went for him. I kicked the table over to, you know, give him a flying headbutt. You know, I believe in clear communication. The finance director tackles us. Just one of those awful alcoholic moments. Classic out where Darren's been found out. The mask has slipped. Now, all I have to leave my sports car there. They're going to cut me a crappy check in a few weeks. It's the worst time, financially speaking, to exit the business, of course. Now, as I'm walking home on a Thursday afternoon, it's really the worst day of my life to that point. But all I care about, like any good alcoholic, is changing the story, getting ahead of the narrative. Wait a minute, you can't be talking poorly about me. Who was in that room? My brother, he's a wanker. Two other people, they don't really count. As long as the boys, I need to get ahead of the story to tell the boys what version I need them to tell. Isn't that just exactly how we live? Now, it was a Thursday night. I'm already going out that night for sure, because was your weekends longer than your week? Yeah. Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday was my weekend. So I get down to the bar before my mates get there. And I have a couple of stiff drinks and woof, the old fierce determination to win comes right back. And here comes Simon, here comes my mate Dave. So did you hear about that bullshit today? My brother, he's a wanker. I built that business up from my bedroom and they bought it. And he's like, yeah, you did, Darren. I said, yeah, I can do anything I put my mind to. And by this time, I'd had another drink. 15 other of my mates had turned up and I've got an audience. I said, screw those people. I know what I'm going to do. When I was a student, I used to love traveling. I'm going to go traveling again when I get my check. In fact, I'm going to go to America and I'm going to become president of America or some shit. Apparently, any fucker can become president. I think the problem is the shitty UK weather. I think the problem is my brother. He's a wanker. I think the problem is my girlfriend. She keeps leaving me for stupid little things like my cheating on her and stuff. But no, somebody puts the problem on a flight at Manchester International Airport and flies him all the way to LAX. And I meet an uncle I'd never met before who's been in Santa Barbara for 20 years. And in the year 2000, he picks me up in his car. He builds a massive spliff, takes a big drag and passes it to me. He said, welcome to America. And I'm like, fuck yeah. I had a ride. Now, I came to America for a two-week holiday 24 years ago. I never made it back to England. I didn't know I was going to almost die of untreated alcoholism. I'm coming here just to take the edge off. Instead, I get my check paid out to me. So instead of staying for 2 weeks, I change my mind quickly after being drunk for 2 weeks, having the time of my life. It's sunny every day. In Manchester, it rains every day. I stay for 90 days is what my visa waiver would allow, and I'm drunk off my ass. I've become a daily drinker without even knowing it. My lack of responsibility is really going to mask my alcoholism. If you think about it, it's not a problem for me or us to stay drunk or drunk and high. It's a problem for other people. It's a problem for spouses, for the authorities. Bosses don't seem to like it. What's the true problem for any real alcoholic is facing life sober. So after 90 days, a friend flies over from England, I buy us an SUV, we travel the whole of America for 5 months, 12,000 miles around the map of America, seeing everything a tourist would want to see, 32 states. I am drunk off my ass in every little town, city, and state. By the time we had such an adventure, by the time we get back to Santa Barbara, I had seven outstanding warrants in five different states. That means we had a good time. We had a good time. My friend, who's normal, flew back to England. I've overstayed my visa and I've become a drunk bartender. My uncle owns a bar, an English pub in downtown Santa Barbara. See, there is a God. I become a drunk bartender hanging on by a thread because I'm supposed to turn up sober. And I do in the beginning. But the anxiety is through the roof. We've been to, and the hangovers are so bad, right? We go to work with a hangover so bad, so freaking bad that most normal people would dial 911. I don't know how we do it, but I'm 18 months and I'm the drunkest person in the bar and I'm the bartender. How I never lost this man his pub, I'll never know. I should have been fired after my first shift. The first shift, I was slumped on the stool in the corner by the locals, and I'm watching out of one eye as they're serving each other, giving each other money and stuff. Like, and I'm like, this ain't right, man. This ain't right. And for 18 months, I had a sense of impending doom. And every time I would wake up, I'd already be in trouble. Wait, I just fucking woke up. I'm in trouble already. I don't know what I'm in trouble for, but I'm definitely in trouble. Now I know why we have a sense of impending doom. It's because something bad is going to happen. The way we're living our life, you know. Oh my God, I'm in the downtown scene. We're doing a lot of white goods and other things so I can try and remember things. Now, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to talk mostly about alcoholism, but I did try cocaine once. For 20 years. I love that shit. I love amphetamines, anything that will allow me to drink dug under the table, you know what I mean? 18 months hanging on by a thread till finally I get fired. I get fired from that bar job, and that was 10 times worse than losing my entrepreneurial position in England. I had been truly found out. The maskers truly, you know, I had a job where you're actually allowed to have a little cheeky drink or two. And I even screwed that up. I remember I came to, there were six missed calls on my phone. I answered the seventh call, really rough. Get down here now. Ooh, that sense of impending doom was about to come to fruition. I went down to the bar, he fired me. Darren, you'll never work in here ever again. There's something wrong with you. You need to go back to England. You need to go to rehab. You need to do something. Oh, I went out and tied one on that night. The drunk of all drunks. I came to the next morning. I went down to that bar to see who took my shift. And I threw a pint over him in front of everybody. How to ostracize yourself from the whole of downtown Santa Barbara in a nanosecond. Everybody loved this bartender. Everybody loved my cousin who ran the pub. Darren, you get out of here right now. I never want to see you ever again. Then I went on a death march. Then I'm just drinking morning, noon, and night. I'm not a cute little drunk. I'm not a functioning alcoholic. I'm a vodka drinking maniac. And a typical day for me is I haven't seen anybody for months and months and months. A typical day is I would come to and it would be pitch black outside. I have no idea whether it's night or day. And figure it out. Oh my God, it's 5 a.m., that darkest hour before the dawn. Now I have strong, horrible, warm vodka under my bed because I'm going to need it at first daylight, but I so desperately don't want to drink. But I can only last 10 minutes of the mental and hellish torture. It's so bad. I've drank so much hard alcohol and done so many drugs, I've ruined my wiring. And only another alcoholic will understand that. I've cracked my mind. And it needs dumbing down by alcohol. That will stop me from fantasizing about killing myself. So after 10 minutes, I reach under the bed. I'm drinking from tall bottles of vodka, and I always have four fingers left in the bottle because it's like a science project. That is exactly what I'll need at first daylight. Now, For 10 minutes, I'll drink that thing down just to solve the crack mind, just to ease me enough that I don't have to kill myself. But here's the problem. I've just fed the beast, and now the beast needs feeding. And I would put on my smelly, baggy clothing to go less than one block to Foodland liquor store to steal my two big bottles of vodka. And one time I'm going to Foodland, and I catch my reflection in the shop front window, and it's so outrageous, I come back to it. Wow. I go right up to the window, and I've got a big, bushy beard. My hair is matted down and stuck to me. I'm so underweight. I'm yellow with jaundice. I look 15 years older than I should have. And I said to myself, I said, wow, I better not tell anyone about that, and carried on to Foodland. They steal me two bottles of vodka, go clinking off home. Now, when you get home, you might want to just pound it and pass out, oblivion. But no, 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 no. It's like a science project. It is immensely important that first bottle gets nursed into the later afternoon, because the second bottle has to get me into the later evening. Because what I'm trying to do, and saving that, I'm trying to get to 10 o'clock, maybe 11 o'clock at night, to wake up and not have to drink like that ever again. Because I could never catch a sleep. But it says the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of jails, institutions, and death. And then I started to turn up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, drunk. Here's how I got sober. I came to one morning and there was no vodka under my bed. That had never happened to me before. And I took it as a sign, this is the day I'm going to kill myself. And I was fine with that. I tried to kill myself 3 months before. 3 months before, all my roommates were downtown partying, having excluded me. It was midnight. I'm maudlin drunk again. And I remembered one of them has an arsenal of weapons in his bedroom. And so I jimmied the door. I broke in there, found all the weapons, a shotgun, an AK, some loaded revolvers. Now, I'm English. I don't quite know what I'm doing with a gun, but I found a loaded handgun, went staggering into the living room, sat down, and put it in my mouth. It was cold. It was heavy on my teeth. And I'm deliberating. Wait, what do? Do you blow the back of your head off, or do you shoot up through the roof of your mouth? And as I'm thinking it through, the thought came to me, Darren, it's midnight. If you pull the trigger right now, you'll definitely wake the neighbors up. You know what I mean? I'm too polite for that shit. You know what I mean? I threw the gun back in there. But today's the day I'm going to do it. And I stay in my bedroom for a couple of hours deliberating how to do it. About 10 a.m., sober as a judge, calm as can be, I decide to throw myself off Santa Barbara's biggest bridge, Cold Springs Bridge, popular suicide spot in our area. So I go outside. Thank God my car is there. Remember that movie, Dude, Where's My Car? My car was there. I jump in it. I drive 20 minutes up to the bridge, and I park the car and I walk to the center of the bridge. And as I'm about to do it, I pause because I know it's going to kill my mum. And in that pause, grace came in the form of a man who told me the truth in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I would share sometimes inappropriately. This is bullshit. A doesn't work. I'm going to kill myself. And he got me off to one side. He said, what are you talking about, Darren? You can't say AA doesn't work. You haven't done shit around here. And I got mad because he's telling me the truth. I said, I've been coming here for a year, old man. He said, well, first of all, Darren, you should come sober. It works better. I said, okay. He said, in a drunk like you, you need to get a sponsor. You need to work with 12 steps to have a psychic change, blah, blah, blah. It's all going through my mind. And I decided not to kill my mum. And I decided I'm going to come back to that AA bullshit. I'm going to do your stupid 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm going to go and find that man. We'll have a little chit chat. I'll take him off the bridge with me, right? So I need to be once again medically detoxed. Jails, institutions, and death. I've been hospitalized multiple times. I've been to the lockdown psychiatry. That's where I need to go back to. And so I drive back down the mountain road. I go to Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital emergency room, and I park in my usual spot. As I'm parking, I sideswipe the car next to me. I can't believe I crashed in the car park after driving down a mountain road. I get out of the car. There's a lot of noise. There's damage to the other car. Two cops are already there. It's the emergency room. They come around the corner. They come up to me. I said, "Hey, I'm sorry. That's my fault. That's my car. I've got my ID." One cop goes behind me. The other one comes right up to me and smells me and goes, "Whoa, have you been drinking?" And I think that's a weird first question. And I said, "No, have you?" They don't like that. He said, "Oh, you're doing some field sobriety tests." I said, "Okay, I do 25 minutes of field sobriety tests." Perfectly. He's so pissed. He makes me do another 15 minutes of them. Then he says, "You need to blow into this breathalyzer." I blow into his breathalyzer and I blow a 0.32. I haven't even had a drink yet. I'm waking up at a 0.32, then I'm drinking my two big bottles of vodka. These two cops just absolutely cannot believe it. They cannot believe it. They're jibber-jabbering with each other, and I'm like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know what's going on. And then he comes to me with taking the handcuffs off, and I start to panic. "Have you ever detoxed in jail?" "I have one." "Oh, my Lord." "You don't." I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Turn around, you're going to jail." And I said, "Listen, if you take me to jail right now, I will kill somebody." I said, "I'm small, mate, but I'm fucking dangerous, dude." Then I start to use the language of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I start to tell the truth, and I start to pour my heart out, and the miracle starts to take place. And of course, they arrest me, but they decide to take me to the local police station instead, which felt so much safer for me. I'll be forever grateful for that. And now I'm handcuffed in the back of the squad car. We're driving along. They decide they radio ahead to the police station to tell them. He says, "Hey, we've got this Irishman," and he blew a 0.32. I said, "I'm English, you moron." Get me to the police station. They put me in the holding cell. They do all the fingerprints and stuff. I swear to God, everybody that worked in that police station came down to speak with me. They came down to meet me, to say hello. I'm chit-chatting with everybody. Then somebody that they know and trust wants to comes and picks me up to take me back to the lockdown psychiatric unit. By now, I'm starting to DT a little bit. Anxiety's creeping in. You know, I need to get well. Now, I've been to the lockdown psychiatric unit before. Like I told you, I've been drunk twice on the way home from that place. So what's going to be different? Well, here's the difference. Darren has hit bottom. Now then, for me, hitting bottom gets misrepresented in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. Hitting bottom for me is something very, very precise. It is when you ask somebody for help and follow through with all the directions. Think about it. The rest is just a bunch of bullshit if you're on my war story. Hitting bottom isn't your worst drunk. It rarely is for us for some reason. Hitting bottom isn't your worst story. It's when you do that and follow some direction. And I was going to prove it. Now, I'm going to the lockdown psychiatric unit, and it sounds a little bit depressing, I suppose, but I love me some lockdown psychiatric unit. You know why? Because a lot of narcotics are coming my way, you know? And when you got the DTs and you need to be medically detoxed, all thoughts of sobriety go out the window. And I know the drill. I know what you need to do. You go into the hospital. They take you to a private elevator. You go up to the fifth floor in Santa Barbara. It's called 5 East. They click you through the door. You're in no man's land. You get on the phone. They click you through the next door, and you're in. You're in the lockdown psychiatric unit once again. Now, the drill is you go to the person behind the little window, don't you, to get as many drugs as is humanly possible. And I know her, and she knows me. I go up to the window, and I said, "Hello, Mary. How you doing, my love?" She's just shaking her head. I said, "Mary, I'm going to need my usual cocktail. I would like 118 Valiums, 2 pints of Seroquel, whatever the fuck those pink things are up there. I'll have some of them and all. And for once, can I have the penthouse suite? Jesus Christ. Yeah." And if not, I'll have my usual room. She's shaking her head. She gives me as many drugs as she's legally allowed to give me. I get a little out of all the drugs. 10 minutes later, woof, loaded to the gills, ready to start judging people again. 3 hours ago, I wanted to kill myself. Now I'm Lord of the Nutwad, you know what I mean? Now I know what I've got to do now that I'm in the lockdown psychiatry unit. I know exactly what I need to do. I know what all you lot do when you're in the lockdown psychiatry unit. I got to go and find myself a little girlfriend in the lockdown psychiatry unit. Don't you lie to me. Now I'm fully loaded up. Where does everybody hang out? They're all in the day room, right? They're in the TV room. So back then you used to get changed out of your clothes and you put your hospital robe on, make sure it's tied in the back. I'm wandering down the corridor. I go to the TV room. I slam open the door so it hits the wall so everybody would look my way so I can survey for my next victim. I'm thinking, look at all these wankers in here. Look at all these losers. There's a girl over here banging her head against the wall. The guy over here drooling on himself. And then I see her. Oh, I see her, the love of my life. Oh, she's gorgeous. She's doing laps on her own around the couch. All on her own. She's got this long black hair, but it's all in front of her face. She's got unusually long arms. She's just walking around the couch going, she looks like that girl out of the movie, the fucking Ringo or something. And I go sliding in there and grab her by the hand and do some laps together. We fall madly in love. Then they detox me from the alcohol by giving me all the drugs. And then they detox me from the drugs and pop me out sober 14 days later. So what? What's going to be different? I'm going to prove that I hit bottom. I go out on a Wednesday afternoon and I did not take a drink, which is an absolute miracle. I went to a very, very powerful men's stag called the Junkyard Dogs. There were 80 men outside this meeting hall, smoking fags, drinking coffee, having a good time. Dozens of them were properly armed with the facts about themselves and the illness of alcoholism. I went straight up to the first one I see. I said, Mike, I just got out today, dude. Again, I'm out. I said, I'm going to drink tonight, man. You know it. I know it. What do I need to do? And he looked at me and he said, holy shit, Darren, are you sober right now? I said, yeah. He'd barely seen me sober that whole year. He said, oh, my God. He said, I've seen you, but let's get into action right now. Normally, we do some reading, the first 60 pages, the ABCs. He said, let's do a third step prayer right now. Listen, I don't pray. I don't believe in God. I hate religion. And I definitely don't pray on my knees. And I said to him, what do you mean in front of these 80 men? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, okay, because the no had been beaten out of me. Darren wasn't too cool for school anymore. Darren was about to conform to the process. So we did a third step prayer in front of everybody. We went into that meeting. I'll never forget that meeting because somebody had a grand mal alcoholic seizure in the meeting. Have you ever seen anyone do it? It's disgusting. They seize up after 2 minutes and they go red. It's disgusting. Now, I've had many grand mal seizures. I just never fucking seen one. You know what I mean? I went home from that meeting and I wrote 100 names on my resentment inventory. 100. I passed out. I came to at 5 a.m. shaking and baking. I wrote 100 more names. I called my sponsor. I was going to drink. It wasn't even 6 a.m. I called my sponsor. He answered the phone. He gave me my next column, and he saved my life. I can never repay this man. I called him 12 times that day to finish all three inventories. I went to his house the next day and we did my fifth step. Took us 3.5 hours. As he's sending me home for my hour of review, he gave me a big hug and he got all emotional. He said, Darren, this is amazing. I said, hey, Mike, I'm glad you feel good. I feel like shit, dude. So don't worry. Don't worry, man. Trust in the process. So I went home and did my hour. The next day I went back to his house. We did step 6 and 7. Step 6 and 7. I didn't understand step 6 and 7. Nobody understands step 6 and 7. Don't worry about it. We had a lot of willingness and he had a lot of humility and I was desperate to move on. So we did. So the next day I went to his house and we did my 8th step. My 8th step was easy. I already had my list. I just had to annoyingly transfer it onto another bloody list. And then I added to my list. On my fifth and sixth day of sobriety, I went out around Santa Barbara and I made 21 amends all over town, 21 amends. And I was lit up like a Christmas tree. I was rocketed into a fourth dimension. My little English heart filled up so much, I thought it was going to burst. And everything made sense. Everything made sense. Oh my God, this is why half of you are really into Alcoholics Anonymous. This is why you're of service. This is why you're sponsoring people. You must experience this. Oh, this is why half of you are miserable as fuck, because you're not doing shit around here. Like I wasn't doing shit around here. And then I had an epiphany. Oh my God, wait a minute. This is what you're calling God. And I got it because I saw, I felt, I believed. I felt so good. I got up the next day and I went to Foodland Liquor Store. I said, I need to speak to the manager. I said, sir, I live real close around the corner. I've been a really bad drunk for a really long time. And I have to tell you, I've been stealing vodka from your store for well over a year. I said, I've added it all up and it comes to $2,750. I said, it's Friday. I just started work for the first time in years. It's Friday. There's $25, sir. I'll be back every Friday with $25 until I've paid that whole amount off and any interest you determine. I said, is there anything else I can do to make this right? And he looked at me and he said, wow. And I looked back at him and I said, wow. I couldn't believe how good it felt to give you your money back. I went floating off to make some more financial amends. I said to my sponsor the next day, what's next? He said, oh my God, Darren, this is amazing. He said, steps 10 and 11. I said, 10 and 11, what's that? He said, yeah, I'll show you step 10, what to do right here, right now, to postpone the punishment of. I'll show you step 11, what to do in the morning and what to do at night. 2 minutes of meditation in the morning, you're already praying your little English ass off. 2 minutes of reviewing your day at night. And I'm like, wait, postpone the punishment of 2 minutes, 2 minutes. He already knew I was a recovered alcoholic, even if I didn't. And thank God he gave me the full strength solution. Thank God he gave me what I now call the guaranteed version of sobriety. Guaranteed. Now, the meditation thing, like most people try and get out of the meditation. I don't know why it became cool to not do the meditation. But you can't skip a fifth step because you have ADHD, can you? No. You can't skip a ninth step because you don't have the time. No. So I don't know when it became cool to miss out on the meditation. Thank God he showed me a two-minute routine. I dislike meditation just like many of you do. But I'm the worst drunk guy I've ever met and I can't cut any corners. And it's taken me 20 years to go from 2 minutes meditation to 10 minutes meditation. 20 fucking years. But God loves him a little trier. God loves him a little fucking trier. My God is cool, dude. My God's got a right mouth on him as well. He's cool. My God is actually up there laughing his bearded ass off at me down here in my bedroom doing my shitty prayer meditation. Laughing his ass off. He's saying to himself, look at that little fuck down there. Doing that shitty prayer meditation. But he sees me trying and then he goes, oh, you know what? You know what? Check. Give that little wanker another day of sobriety. That's how cool my God is. He doesn't care I'm a potty mouth man from Manchester. He cares about my actions. He cares about my helping others, which I do relentlessly. Relentlessly. Steps 10 and 11 are like the keys to the kingdom. Steps 10 and 11 are so simple, you won't do it. Isn't that the truth? What is wrong with us? Only an alcoholic will burn his life to the ground to then come running to a 12-step program just to resist the 12 steps. What is wrong with us? But I am in, dude. I am sold on the plan outline in this book. Postpone the punishment of, weren't you being punished the last few years or months of your drinking and using? It was like hell on earth, and I get to push that off one day at a time for the rest of my life if I want permanent sobriety. And some of us are sicker than others, right? I'm not as sick as Doug, but I'm pretty sick. So I have to work a hell of a program just to feel normal. Just to feel normal. I got to be in the trenches, dude. I got to be sponsoring people. I've got to be doing my shitty prayer and meditation. I got to be of service. I got to get involved. I got to do all this just to be another worker amongst workers. I sponsor so many men in Santa Barbara. I do so much AA. I should be the Dalai fucking Lama. Well, no, I do all this just to be another bozo on the bus. Just to be, but I am in. And why are we doing this? This is the greatest show on earth, man. This is for fun and for free. We get to do this. This is amazing. If you're not having a good time, get through the 12 steps and start sponsoring people. All these little soap operas in your life will kick, love it. Some are tragic and awful. Some are great. Someone's getting married and engaged, or they're having a child. Someone's getting divorced, and someone's going back to rehab and all this. It's just amazing. I can't believe we get to do this. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And we do this for the full heart moment. When you're driving home tonight, if you have a full heart, think of that. We can keep that full heart moment as much as I'm wanting to do the work. But I have to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have to go through the 12 steps to even begin to experience it. And we've entered the world of the Spirit. And I'll finish with this story about we've entered the world of the Spirit. I was speaking at a young person's convention in the Bay Area. I'm from Santa Barbara, drove 6 hours up to the Bay Area, San Jose. Now, 3,000 of these young maniacs have taken over this Hilton complex. If you've never been to a WIPO event, you have to go because they are annoying as fuck and fun as fuck, all rolled into one. 3,000 of these youngsters there. Now, many, they're out there in the time of their lives. Many of them ended up in the emergency room because they've overdosed on Red Bull. You know what I mean? Don't worry, they put them on a monster drip and they were just fine, right? Now, I'm the closeout speaker. I'm the Sunday speaker. So a lot of these little fucks have already gone home, right? So that made my resentment inventory. There's 600 people left or whatever it is, and it's a Sunday morning and I'm the closeout speaker. There's a girl next to me who's going to give a talk before me. We've got 5 minutes before we're up, and everybody's looking our way, and they're all ready for this. And I look over here, and she's texting on her phone. She's texting on her phone. It really annoyed me because I think it's completely out of line, you know. And but it's absolutely none of my business, right? So I get involved right away. What are you doing? What's going on, like? Now, she's texting. We're in the Bay Area. She's texting. We've never met each other. She's texting her sponsor in L.A. Her sponsor in L.A. got sober 21 years previously in a co-ed recovery house, 20 of them. They're staying sober, her and this other guy. It's the usual story. Most everybody else relapses. Some go to jail. One goes to prison. A couple of people die. The usual stuff. But her and her friend Matt, they stay sober 90 days together. It's unbelievable. He then moves to Maui, Hawaii, gets plugged into AA, has a family, has a great life. But he has two boys that are now 19 and 20. They're on the mainland going to college, and they are dying of untreated alcoholism. And he doesn't know what to do, and he's frantic. And the only number he still has, so he texts her, she texts a couple of her sponsees, one's next to me. She looks at me and says, well, can I give them your number? I need a male number. I said, of course you can, no problem. We give our talks, everything goes great. Now the conference is over, I'm getting into my car. Now when I speak out of town, I like to take my tough guys with me, you know what I mean? Some of the tough sponsors, you know, the tatted up folks, you know, you gotta take your tough guys with you, and you never know what's gonna happen. You might run into some of them any fuckers, you know what I mean? So we're in the car driving down. I call this man, he's on speakerphone. I said, hey, my name's Darren. I'm at a conference, just asked to give you a call. And there's nothing at the end of the other end of the phone. It's silence. And then we realize he's crying. He's crying, and it's such a moment of humility. And I want to cry as well, but I can't because I'm with my tough guys, and I look over him like, wait a fuck. Are you crying? Yeah. Tattoos on his neck. Then I look in the rearview mirror. I'm like, no. Yeah. Are you crying? You got tattoos on your face, for Christ. They're all crying their eyes out, and then eventually this man catches his breath. He says, "Darren, thank you so much for calling me. I've got to tell you, I've been sober a long time, 21 years, and I have never, ever, ever asked for anything of myself. But my prayer has always been, if my two boys need the hand of aid, please let it be there." I said, "Dude, I'm in. I'm all in. I know a lot of people in a lot of different states. Where are they? I'll try my best to get them hooked up." He said, "They both attend Santa Barbara City College."
Ah.
I said, "I work at Santa Barbara City College. And I go back to Santa Barbara and I meet both those two young men. One of them joins the Junkyard Dogs, 7 years sober. Now he's living in LA, living his best life. The other one, not doing well, doing the dance with alcoholism. You know, isn't that the yin and the yang of Alcoholics Anonymous? Somebody over here is killing it. Somebody over here is drowning. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. But you've got to get into action." I'll leave you with this. If you're struggling with the God thing, whether you're new or not, I'll leave you with this. Religion might be for those people that are trying to avoid going to hell, but spirituality is for people that have been to hell. Thank you all very much.